today on the Critical Mass Podcast. We've got a great interview with Hank Brown, author of the military action novel Hell and Gone, as well as some announcements and writing opportunities regarding this year's benefit books and some other writing opportunities that I think you guys might find interesting. So stick around.
Critical thinking is a persistent effort to examine any belief or supposed form of knowledge in the light of the evidence that supports it and the further conclusions to which it tends. Critical mass is the point at which a reaction becomes self-sustaining.
You're listening to the Critical Mass Podcast. I'm your host, Winston Crutchfield. First order of business is the announcement of two new benefit projects running through the summer. Both projects will accept submissions from June through the end of August, with scheduled publication in October. Entries should be themed according to the project and less than 10,000 words. Project 1 is entitled Miracles and takes a passage from Luke chapter 7 as the project's theme. When the men came to Jesus, they said, "John the Baptist sent us to you to ask, 'Are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else?' At that very time, Jesus cured many who had diseases, sicknesses, and evil spirits, and gave sight to many who were blind. So he replied to the messengers, 'Go back and report to John what you have seen and heard. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor. Blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me.'" Project 2 is entitled Forerunner and takes a passage of Luke chapter 3 as the project's theme. "He went into all the country around the Jordan, preaching a baptism of repentance for the forgiveness of sins. As it is written in the book of the words of Isaiah the prophet, 'A voice of one calling in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, make straight paths for him. Every valley shall be filled in, every mountain and hill made low. The crooked roads shall become straight, the rough ways made smooth, and all people will see God's salvation.'" Both projects are meant to highlight the truly supernatural things that happen with the divine when the divine reaches down to touch the mundane, and all that results from that contact. Sales from benefit books this year will continue to be donated to Compassion International. Artwork, as well as manuscripts, will be considered for both projects. Dedicated writer... more information may be found on the Critical Press Media website under Submission Information. Now, dedicated writers have another opportunity to scratch that itch if you can pen a 1,000-word story before July 4th. Action author Phil Elmore has been tapped to edit a flash fiction anthology revolving around the steampunk setting, The Spirit of St. Louis, and he is accepting submissions through July 4th, so follow the links in the show notes and get all the details. Keep an ear to the podcast, as I hope to have him on the show before then to spill a little of the inside scoop. Meantime, let's dive into the reaction chamber, where author Hank Brown of the military action novel Hell and Gone has been waiting in the hot seat. Look at that. I got a red line on the meter. It looks like we're recording.
Common batteries to power, turbines to speed.
Oh, and you know what? I just can't ask for a better introduction with that, so I'm going to steal it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the reaction chamber. I'm in here with Hank Brown, author of the military action novel Hell and Gone, and blogger over at the Two-Fisted Blog. Is Two-Fisted...
Two-Fisted Blogger.
Two-Fisted Blogger, doggone it. And I had that right on the tip of my tongue. Hank, thanks so much for taking some time to talk with us today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me on today.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I called you as an excuse to talk about your book, which I am as of this recording, I'm in the process of reading, and by the time
by the time this airs, I'll have finished the book, you know, hopefully. But so you want to give us just kind of a snapshot of your novel and you know, kind of the elevator pitch. What's on the back cover copy?
Oh boy, I can read that to you. Probably be a lot more intelligent than what I can see.
Hey, whatever works for you.
It's a military thriller, action adventure, men's adventure, and it's kind of a counterterrorism story. I guess you'd call it a it's related to the war on terror. And really what it is, in a nutshell, it's kind of a throwback to the men's adventure type novels that were written in the 80s and pretty much died out in the 90s, and which themselves were a throwback to the old pulp classics, I think. And that's pretty much what it is, a kind of a Dirty Dozen type mission with some has-been, some guys who once upon a time they were the nation's finest, but now they're a little long in the tooth, but because of the need for plausible deniability, they get hired as PMCs, private military contractors, to neutralize a threat.
And isn't the CIA just your favorite outlet for plausible deniability?
Right.
That's excellent. Yeah, you mentioned the Dirty Dozen, and that's really the kind of vibe that I've been getting from reading this novel. You've got, you know, it's no mistake. You've got 12 guys there. You know, they're all different, you know, all different personalities. They come from all different backgrounds. You know, the Dirty Dozen were all prisoners, and these guys are all, you know, all ex-military. So they've got that, you know, that kind of similar bond to draw them together. And in more than one place, the characterization that you've been using, because you spend you're not spending a great deal of time on each individual character, but each one has had each of the guys has had a moment where you get to know a little bit about them, and you get to know a little bit about where they came from, and enough you get to know enough to distinguish them in the mind of the reader. And I find that very rewarding, especially for a reader like me, who, when the cast exceeds, you know, kind of four or five people, I start nudging my buddies and saying, "Who's him again?" And, you know, which always leads to conversations like "Knucklehead, that's Sly Stallone." But
I appreciate that, and it's intentionally so. It's a lot more like the Dirty Dozen, or Where Eagles Dare, or Forced In from Navarone, than it's meant to be like any of the techno thrillers from Clancy or Cussler. Or like that. It's more of old school is the way I think of it. And the characterization, it really was, when I decided I was going to write this novel, that was like the big relief, is because I didn't have any trouble coming up with characters. I knew these guys already. They're basically, some of them are amalgams, but some of them are just literal guys that I changed their names and just wrote them into the story.
Well, that's awesome. It certainly you've got the gritty kind of real earth feel that comes with the heavily grounded military action novels. So, I mean, that's just spot on. And the characters are memorable. I've mentioned that before. The main guy, Kavara, is a really really well developed lead. He's the kind of military soldier, you know, the military special forces operator, that you as a reader want to envision your military to be like. Or, you know, if I can make this personal, the kind of military special forces operator that my brother, who's currently in the Army, wanted to be going in, and, you know, has since decided he'd rather fly helicopters.
Yeah. Don't blame him.
But you write with a fair knowledge of military tactics, and the hardware involved in a military operation. And I've noticed from the pictures and posts on your blog that you have a military background yourself. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
I joined the military right out of high school, and it was the primary reason I did so was out of patriotism, which, let me tell you, at that time, and maybe even more so now, it was really idiosyncratic of the people going in. So because of that and the people that were already in, I got pretty disillusioned. But anyway, I also had a chip on my shoulder, so I wanted to be a bad dude, and I wanted to go airborne ever since I read about the 101st at Boston. That was during the Battle of the Bulge. And so I volunteered for that right away, and I ended up being in, serving in the 82nd and some other units under SOCOM there at Bragg. And I developed a love-hate relationship with the military, and I kept getting out and kind of, you know, I kind of kept drifting back toward it. Every so often, just something would lure me back, and I tend to put that into a lot of the characters as well. The fact that they hate it, and yet it's something that's part of them, or it's something that resonates with them. Like, that's where they belong.
Right. That's, you know, the one of your characters actually says something very, you know, almost word for word, exactly like that. You know, I can't get out of the military. I have nowhere else to go. This is who I am. You know, I'm a soldier.
Yeah, and it's like I described it at one point, like a battered wife who keeps going back to her abusive husband, or a fly or other insect drawn to an electric bug zapper. It's just it's some kind of a primordial attraction that, unfortunately, is at the root of a lot of us.
Well, I don't know that that's unfortunate. The military represents a lot of good things and has done a lot of good things, and we need those men in uniform who have that drive to be the, you know, to be all that they can be, who have that patriotic drive to defend their country and to defend the people counting on them, and who have that, who belong standing in the gap so that, everybody else doesn't have to. That's something that has been needed throughout history, and I don't think that's ever really going to change. I wouldn't characterize that at all as an unfortunate tendency.
But, I appreciate that. Thank you.
with Helen gone, the military action is really grounded in the tech and in the characterization. I really appreciate that. Probably though, the one thing that jumps out immediately in the novel is your use of language. Now, when you hear the words military action, action thriller, you think of a hard-bitten, rough, tough group of guys who spend their time fighting and cussing. And your guys are certainly spending their time fighting, but there's not a lot of cussing going on in this book. To the point where several of your characters have made a point of, the one incident that comes immediately to mind is when Kavara is talking with his CIA contact, and he, you know, makes a point basically of saying, "I don't speak like that." And of all the kind of tropes of the genre, that's one that just really came out of left field at me. It's obviously a conscious decision on the writer's part to not have these hard-edged men speak, turning the air blue around them. Can you tell us a bit about that decision and why that was made and where that comes from?
Sure. It was a conscious decision, and it was – I'm actually surprised more people haven't taken notice of that. And the only other one who's mentioned it so far was a reviewer at the New Podler, or New Podler, however you pronounce it. But I actually wrote a little bit on my webpage about that in anticipation. And it was a struggle for me because, for one thing, having been in the military, I myself had a really filthy mouth for many years. And it was hard to tone that down. And it's kind of habitual. When I get around those kind of people again, it kind of slips out. And I decided on a compromise when I wrote it. I didn't want to eliminate it all, or it just be too ridiculous to believe. But, I mean, people, military men don't say heck and darn and doggone and gosh.
Gee whiz, Captain. I think they're shooting at us.
Right. But on the other hand, you know, there are no F-bombs in the whole book, which is, you know, it's unrealistic, and I admit that. But I didn't want to alienate people from the audience that might otherwise enjoy what kind of book it is. And part of that has to do with the fact that I'm a Christian, and my peers are mostly Christian, and I wouldn't want to write something that they would be embarrassed for me about. Now, although I don't think it's, you know, a cardinal sin or anything, some people will watch adultery and fornication and anything else in a movie and have little problem with it, but if they hear an F-bomb, they go berserk. And I'm not like that, but I specifically made an effort to tone it way down so that it could have like a PG audience and people wouldn't have to worry about their kids reading what I write. Well, anyway, there was a phenomenon that went on when I was in the service where it came down from the top that a lot of the potty mouth NCOs had to clean up their act and the way they spoke, and they had to start using substitutionary words in a creative way, like words like stink and things like that, and they did. And so I kind of took advantage of that, and also wherever I could, we had, you know, there are, when you're a paratrooper and you go through your pre-flight training, they emphasize the points of contact that you hit the ground with during a PLF or parachute landing fall. And it's balls of the feet, calves, thighs, buttocks, and push-up muscle. Well, the buttocks is the fourth point
of contact.
So it's kind of an expression you hear a lot in the military is, you know, your fourth point of contact. You can imagine the different contexts you can use that in. So wherever possible, instead of using the synonym for the homonym for donkey, I use that term. And there's a lot of the jargon that was popular when I was in was of Vietnam War vintage. And one of the terms, it was kind of obscure, not every unit picked this up, but there was a Vietnamese curse that sounds like the English word doom. And doom on you is a curse. It means, you know, some kind of cursing on you. I can't exactly transliterate. But doom also is a lot like, you know, it has a meaning in English, much like the word damn. So I use that word a lot, too, because one word, I don't go berserk when I hear cussing like some people do, but when I hear the words initialized as GD, that's really a powerful word, and it grates on me, so I've never used that. And I've only spoken it in my life when I was extremely furious. In a nutshell, that's why I took pains to keep it clean, language-wise.
Well, I greatly appreciate it as somebody who's sensitive to language and sensitive to language use myself. I really appreciated that. That was one of the things that really stood out for me. Another thing that really kind of stood out for me was the portrayal of, you mentioned you're a Christian, and there is a scene in there where you talk about the interaction in Africa between the Muslims and the Christians and a particular massacre scene that has happened there. And of course, you use a villainous perspective for your terrorists who happen to be, I don't know, Islamic extremists, I guess, would be the current favored term. And I have noticed an absence of the kind of holy war language that is typically associated with both, you know, with the interaction between between Christians and Muslims. I mean, it's obvious that you're not advocating a universalist perspective here, but you know that you're acknowledging the differences between these two religions and the motivations that each one brings and the perspectives that each one has on the other. But at the same time, it's really tangential to the actual action of the novel. And just kind of something that it comes out in passing as motivation for the characters. And I really think that in this kind of novel, that's the way that that these kind of things should be handled, the way it should be handled correctly. So another props to you for that as well.
Oh, thank you. I know when I conceived the character of Bassam Amin, I spent some time trying to put myself in his place. And he's only 15 years old, and he's certainly not a religious fanatic. I didn't see him that way, and or even a devout Muslim. But that's the only teaching he's ever known, religion-wise, so he doesn't have anything to compare it to or anything to exchange for that. So it colors his worldview, but really, when I thought about what could motivate me at that age to commit suicide and trying to kill my enemies, one of the things I came up with was, you know, a hormonal motivation, because that was almost overpowering at those age in the mid-teens, and that's kind of where I went with him. So he was kind of an every guy. He just happened to be stuck in this crappy situation, and with no truth or no wisdom to, I guess you'd say, liberate him from both the combination of the cruelty he's been enduring all his life and the philosophy he's evolved because of his circumstances.
And this is this just speaks again to the extra time and care that you put into characterization in your book, not only of your heroes but also of the antagonists and the motivation. It's just it's been something that I've really, really enjoyed reading, and look forward to finishing quite a bit. Now I want to take a side turn here. We mentioned that you're a blogger, and your site is the Two-Fisted Blogger. Do you want to why don't you give me a proper URL on that, and tell me a bit about your blog and the kind of things that you talk about there?
Sure, it's the one I first got the idea. I think someone suggested it to me that I should start a blog, and the context they suggested it was as a marketing tool for my books, and that's at the time I was like, yeah, it's something I probably should do, but I really don't have time for another project and another thing I need to keep up on regularly.
Who does?
Yeah, which you probably understand. But then I was actually getting my books ready to, in the electronic form, to submit to Google Books. And that was a big confusing issue. issue, and I still don't know if I even did it right, but while I was getting them ready, as I was going through the different pages and clicking on this and that and filling out forms, I accidentally clicked on something that started my own blog.
Oh, no.
I said, well, it must be an omen. I better do it. And it's something I would have wanted to do anyway, not because, not just because I want to market my own books and get people to buy them, although I do want that to happen. It's also kind of because I'd like to see the genre make a comeback, and by the genre I mean men, the big umbrella of men's fiction, fiction for men. And I think since the 90s it died off, and a lot of people will tell you it's because men stopped reading, that, so New York doesn't publish anything for them anymore. And I'm speaking, you know, in exaggerations or general terms.
Sure.
I know there are some things published for some men. But I took it, I can't help thinking that it might be the other way around, because when I look at myself, I stopped reading, or the amount of reading I did dropped way off after the early 90s when I couldn't find anything at the bookstore anymore that appealed to me. I had to go to used bookstores and find stuff that was out of print, or once in a while I'd find a title that was fairly new that interested me to some degree, but it was few and far between. And so I think, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Did men stop reading because there's nothing for them to read anymore, fiction-wise? And I'm talking about certain men who like, you know, the adventure-flavored stuff.
Right. I understand exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Or did they stop publishing that because men stopped reading? So my blog is kind of I review that kind of stuff, you know, more than anything else. And I review movies as well, too, movies appeal to men and whatever, you know, cavemen like me. And it's also, I hope, and I naively hope that I can spark a new interest in the genre. And now with ebooks and the revolution of publishing industries coming through, it could possibly be that the genre will make a comeback, and I'd love to be a part of that. And whether it works or not, I'm going to keep doing it because it's something, you know, that I'm passionate about, something that I enjoy.
And so the Two-Fisted Blogger just kind of came about through a combination of wanting to see men's fiction revived and an accidental click on a button you didn't know what it did. I think that's by far the best blog origin story that I've ever heard. That's truly awesome. Well, Hank, I want to thank you again for taking some time to talk with me about this stuff. The book we were talking about is Hell and Gone, and it's about a group of ex-paramilitary types, or I guess ex-proper military types, who get drafted into a paramilitary, I have trouble with that word, operation, and the adventures, or I guess it's mission, it's not an adventure. And it's adventure when you're not getting paid to do it.
Yeah, it's an adventure for someone who's reading about it, not for someone who wants to do it.
No, and we talked a lot about where this came from, and the fact that you know, we talked a bit about the language, and we talked. You mentioned your faith as a driving force behind all that. One thing that we didn't touch on, and I really want to just kind of squeeze in there before it, before we sign off here, is that even with all of these considerations for language and faith, this is a gripping, brutal action novel. I mean, I have I've gotten through the first major fight scene in the book now, and it was just really, really tense, and just really, really brutal, and some violent action going on here. So, you know, you're living up to your two-fisted name here. You're not pulling any punches in the action department. But at the same time, I didn't have to have my ears abused in order to, to get to that action.
Well, so, thank you. You know, I love hearing that. I love finding someone who appreciates that. It's something that I wish some of the old novels that are some of my favorites are they're like that. They're full of action. Sometimes brutal. Sometimes just effective. But they're also sexed up, and they're full of they're full of stuff you wouldn't want to say around your mother or any other woman, probably.
Or my kids,
especially your kids. And it's unfortunate to me that it's kind of obligatory that you have to do that. There's a lot of things in film and fiction that jump out at me as obligatory, and that's one of them that I just don't appreciate it. And I try to avoid doing that. And yeah, it is violent. It's like Old Testament violent. But I don't really see, I was about to get defensive there. I don't know why. I guess because of the Christian pacifist angle. But it's something that happens out there in the real world. And I just wanted to depict it without being overly offensive or offensive for being offensive's sake.
Well, it was both not offensive and it was very, very effective. So don't let action fans don't expect any soft sell on that score. All right, well, if we don't get off the phone, I'm going to keep you here all day. So, Hank, again.
All right, well, thanks a lot, Winston. I really appreciate it and enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Where can we find your book?
You can find it at all the online outlets, the Barnes & Noble site, Amazon site, of course. It's going through, if you want the print edition, because it's in the Kindle stores and the Nook store, it's in all of those. If you want the print edition, you can still get that on Amazon, but I'm in the process of changing publishers. So I think it's down to just Amazon right now, but that should change by March at the latest, and you should be able to order it pretty much anywhere, especially from my site.
Okay, fantastic. And your site then is?
It's www.hell-and-gone.
.com. Absolutely.
.com, right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hellandgone.com. I understand there's a movie being made with a similar title. And I don't know what their website is going to say, but mine has the hyphens in between the words.
Okay, very cool. And I'll make sure I drop some links to that in the show notes. Well, all right. Keep your powder dry and keep your head down and get to writing us a sequel to this, will you?
All right. Thanks, Winston.
All right. Take care, Hank.
Email at mindspike@criticalpressmedia.com.
This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license.